2204, in re marriage of Michael Lemire and Marsha Lemire. The first lawyer to argue will be James R. Sickle, who will argue on behalf of Ms. Lemire. 25 minutes, 30 minutes, Lisa L. Gamaltoff will argue on behalf of Michael Lemire, and then Mr. Sickle has 5 minutes to rebuttal. You may proceed, counsel.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is James Sickle. I represent Marsha Lemire. Marsha Lemire is here this morning, and I'll point her out. She's among the students. This is Marsha. Marsha is the appellant in this action, and this is a divorce action from Brown County Circuit Court, where the court divided the marital property unequally in regard to the family business, the major asset of the marriage. The court did not follow the presumption of equalization, but gave, in Wisconsin statutes, gave 65% of the value of the business to Michael and only 35% to Marsha. This, in effect, gave Michael approximately $267,000 more of the business than Marsha.
The court, counsel, did it make any difference? I'm looking at page 15 of your opponent's brief, that there ultimately, in this case, was a 54-46 split. So we know that there, you're arguing that there was an unequal split of the business, but ultimately, boiling down to the split of the entire assets, your opponent indicates that the estate was divided ultimately on a 54-46 basis, $1,758,000 to the respondent and $1,491,000 to the appellant.
Right.
Does that make any difference to your argument of the unequal split of the business?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't. The unequal split of the marital assets in totality is contrary to the whole essence or the idea of marriage as a partnership, as a shared enterprise, as a joint endeavor. This is a, when we enter a marriage, it's for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer. And what happened here is the court determined at the end of this marriage that the sharing concept of marriage, or and that the treating of the parties equally during the marriage, or that marriage, that the parties, the husband and wife, are equal in the marriage, are unequal when it comes time to divide the marital assets at the time of the dissolution of the marriage.
Counsel, the reason for the question is, let's say hypothetically it was the same split, talking about 65-35 with the business, but it was made up in other areas. So one could argue that if this was a 50-50 division and those were equal amounts, are you still saying that because the business was split differently, that it caused this... 54-46, or in your case, you're arguing 65-35, but if it was 50-50, ultimately, would that make any difference?
If the whole marital estate was divided 50-50, of course, the presumption would be followed, Your Honor.
But the point is that the business could be divided unequally and still come up with a 50-50 split. That's what I'm, that's the reason for the question.
If you're indicating that if the business is split 45-65 and the rest of the property is split 65-45, if the total asset value ends up being equal, then the court has divided the property equally. And in this case, of course, the total asset value of the marriage, I'm sorry, of the marital assets was about $3,160,000.
If it was total 50-50, would you be here, counsel?
I would be here on the other issues.
But not this issue.
But not this issue, Your Honor.
So your real objection is that ultimately it was not an even division, caused largely by the fact that the business, which was the major asset, was divided unequally.
Yes.
And what's wrong with that in this case?
Because what the court did was basically value the work contribution of Michael greater than the homemaking contribution of Marsha. What the court said was Michael's efforts and as the court wrote, the industriousness and extra efforts, if you will, gave Michael a reward. But in doing so, the court penalizes Marcia for staying at home and taking care of the home-making chores that she attended to during this marriage.
What's wrong with valuing the economic contribution, the business contribution of the husband, and giving the economic contribution greater weight than the homemaker contribution?
Because the Wisconsin law presumes that the contributions to the marriage are equal. And 767-255-3D, which says contributions to the marriage, and then goes on to say that the court gives equal consideration or value to the homemaking of each party, to the homemaking and child care. What that does is reinforces the concept of a marriage partners are equal and that their contributions towards this marriage. The contribution in this marriage is not just work and build a business. The contributions were society, companionship, homemaking skills, social enjoyment, a family, which is what Marcia created, and Michael together. All of these contributions. The statute does not say we look at the economic contribution of the marriage. The statute says we look at the contributions to the marriage. There are other factors the court could, if in this case, which is not a short-term marriage or other factors within the statute that allow the court its discretion to unequally divide the property, but the court is not allowed to divide the property based upon a financial contribution by the way of work. What that does is it says to a individual that I earn it, therefore it's mine. And that has been discarded during marriage, that the earnings, the wages, the fruits of the person's labor are not individual property. Their marital property.
Mr. Sickle, isn't it correct that the statutes provide for discretion in the trial judge? And what kind of deference do we owe to the discretion that was exercised here by Judge Warpinski?
The trial judge's discretion is not unfettered. Obvious, the court has to follow the law that is in this case with regard to division of property. The factors that are set out in 767-255 sub 3, and the factors include the length of the marriage. The court mentioned none of those in its decision. The court did not mention the length of the parties when it came to determining the property division. The court did not consider the age of the parties. The court did not consider the earning capacity of Marcia or her absence from the marketplace. The court did not consider, maintenance. In fact, the court awarded virtually no maintenance, $615 a month maintenance, when the husband in this case is earning $32,309 a month.
The 615 sounds out of line until we understand, and I think this is correct, that your client has about $14,000 a month coming to her in support, in maintenance, and in return on investments. Is that not correct?
What the court found was she has coming to her on the as the court divided the marital assets, about $8,800 a month. And what the court put in that, and that's from earnings on the property that she would get in this marriage, as well as an imputed income that the court said that Marcia was able to earn, basically $10 an hour, approximately $20,000 a year. At trial, Marcia told the court she worked in various capacities as a cleaning person, as a daycare worker, and as a dental receptionist for the first 10 years of the marriage. After that 10 years, she decided with Michael and at his encouragement to stay home and take care of the kids. And therefore, she informed the court at the time of trial that that was her intention to do. Their two children, aged 10 and 12 at the time of the divorce, now aged 12 and 14, young girls, that she wanted to continue being the homemaker for, supporting them, going to their classes or their school events, and doing the child care services, and she felt it important. So what the court was doing was adding to her income, and that was simply imputed, wasn't in existence, and wasn't going to be earned upon the testimony in this case. So what she really had, if the interest income was there, was approximately somewhere a little over $6,000 for monthly income from these other assets as the court apportioned. And whereas Michael, as the court found, earned $32,000 a month in income, an award of maintenance of $615 certainly, as the court noted in the Hubert case, would cause serious consideration of whether the court gave consideration to a near equal division of the total income in setting maintenance, or whether it resulted in simply an award of unjust enrichment, as it were, to the husband. What happened here is when the court said, the court looked at solely on the issue of maintenance needs, and didn't look at all at the fairness factor. In fact, the court said that what Marcia doesn't need, as the court decided, because Marcia asked for income or an award for maintenance an award of maintenance payments for her future savings, and the court denied that, but yet awarded it to Michael.
Counsel, I want to stay on the property division issue, if I may. I think you have a hard argument to make if your argument is, look, the trial court did it 51-49 property division or 55-45 or whatever, because we all know that there is a presumption of a 50-50 split, but it can be rebutted. So you've got to show that the trial court did something wrong. Take a look at Appendix 125. This is the appendix of that you filed. Top paragraph, this is the trial court's decision. Do you have that in front of you?
I do, Your Honor.
And in the top paragraph on Appendix 125, the trial court makes reference to the Parrott case, which is of significance in this analysis. And it says, in Parrott, the court unequally divided the husband's interest in a business that was awarded to him. The trial court relied on the economic circumstances of the parties. There is here, that decision was based on the husband's industriousness and extensive efforts in creating a business enterprise. Now I get to the punchline. I find that the petitioner's effort to start, maintain, and expand MGL Fitness from a small box operation to a multi-location, multi-million-dollar business is a substantial economic contribution to the marriage, justifying an unequal property division. I read that last sentence, I find, etc., that he is basing his decision on unequal property division based on the substantial economic contribution of the husband in this marriage. Is that the basis of your argument, or am I misconstruing your argument?
Well, the court relied on Parrott, Your Honor, or what Parrott developed as a genius factor. The genius factor that this gentleman created a huge asset And therefore, because of my genius, my contribution, I should get more of that property. The genius factor is, of course, would open a whole Pandora's box, if you will, of what is genius. Is that genius, or is this just mere luck? And if we start applying a genius factor or the industriousness factor in dividing marital property, then shouldn't we apply the dunce factor? What if this this individual made a bonehead business move and the property is worth less? Should they be penalized for that action? The other thing is that what it calls is it says to the court, it opens the court to require that each person's efforts in creating this business be determined of whether they were, on subjective nature, a successful enterprise, a successful businessman, or were you a failure at a business as a businessman and should get less? Or were you a failure as a homemaker? Because what you do is you then, by quantifying the contribution, economic contribution, why would you not then, and you do it by de facto, if you're saying that they're unequal, quantify the marital contribution of homemaking and child care skills? And how do you quantify that? Most people would say it's priceless. You can't put a value. In fact, I think that is the emphasis the Supreme Court or the legislature did when it put when it wrote the statute that reads or that says Part D, which indicates that the contributions of each party to the marriage giving appropriate economic value to each party's contribution in homemaking and child care services. What they're doing is putting in a punchline. Homemaking, child care are equal to the value of wage earning, money making. That is what is said there. Counsel. It reinforces the equal division and the equality of the parties and spouses.
Is there any claim made here or any finding of fact by the judge that her efforts in maintaining the home, raising the kids, etc., were any less than his efforts or any in building this business? Or put it another way, is there any claim or finding of fact that she did not carry her own weight, that she did not expend the same kind of efforts at what the couple obviously had decided was going to be a division of responsibilities here?
Right. I find none. In fact, the court says that the children seem to be well-adjusted, do well in school, that the both parties are. But the court...
See, I take it as a given in this case that the court's finding with respect to him is very, very valid, or very true, that he was very industrious. He worked hard. He worked long hours. He gave up days off, etc. But I find no finding with respect... I'm asking you, is there any finding with the same respect to what she did? Because obviously her contributions could well have matched or even surpassed his contributions in terms of raising the kids, taking care of the house, etc.
The only fault, apparently, the court finds with Marcia is not her homemaking or child care skills, but that she didn't participate in this business. That she was basically at home, which, in fact, she's being penalized for then by not receiving half of that. That's what the court said. She did nothing for this business. Well, she testified, of course, and that when he came home, he was upset about various business decisions. She talked to him. She provided emotional support. She was there as a homemaker. There are only the only other state that talks about the parent concept of the genius factor is Florida. In a case in Florida, the court termed the woman, after a long-term marriage, an ornament. Obviously, the court felt that person did not participate in the marriage. But is that what we are to do in Wisconsin, is to value what Marcia did? The court then would have to open up its courtroom and impose that each person, each participant, in order to get the presumed 50-50 division of assets, prove up that they were a good work mother, homemaker, child care provider, good super dad, super mom. And if you're a super dad or super mom, why shouldn't you get more than of the marital property that was acquired during this marriage than if you're a super contributor financially?
Counsel, sorry. I have read and reread Parrott a number of times. Parrott was a 7-year marriage. How long was this marriage?
20, Your Honor.
20 years. That's generally viewed as a long-term marriage.
It is.
Long enough, maybe.
Well, yeah. Each person would have their own opinion of what is enough.
Okay. And I read the trial court's opinion, and especially the paragraphs that Justice Bradley made reference to. And it just struck me, if I might, that it reminded me of decisions I read in the 1970s from trial courts and this court, early 70s, that think that the partner who goes out and gets the funds is more important to the marriage and is deserving more in what we call equitable distribution here than the partner who stays home. Now, this, our society pays at least lip service to the concept that raising a family, staying home, raising a family, and keeping a home is of prime importance, ultimately, to the continuation of our kind of society. And why would people want to stay at home? And it could be a man and it could be a woman. It happens to be a woman here, which is more the traditional. But there are many men now who stay at home and take care of the children. Agree?
I would agree.
You're not one of them, though.
I do my share, I feel.
I'm glad you feel obliged to say that, Counsel. He is blushing for those who cannot see him.
He's making turn around. That's not true.
And I a transcript of this will be
and I am here, and I do my share, and have a husband who has probably done more than his share at home. Now, if we're going to agree that they're equal treatment, it would seem to me that your argument should be that this is a 20-year marriage. She did what they agreed she should do, namely stay at home. And he did what he agreed to do in this partnership, which was, first, he was an employee. On a part-time basis, he built up this business, right?
Yes.
And he used other people to do that, and then ultimately went full-time in this. And so that is your position 50-50 right down the line?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. I think the reasoning in Parrott is wrong to value. I think Parrott, in effect, should be overruled. From the standpoint, Parrott's different. This case is not Parrott. Parrott, as the court said, is a short-term marriage. There was a younger woman. She's 35 years old when she left. She was fully employed and continued employed. Marcia is not. She left the workforce after 10 years. She's 45. I wouldn't say not young, but she's not younger. Parrott also was distinct, and then the court characterized as generous child support and meaningful maintenance was awarded. Here, and this is another factor, that the interrelationship of child support, maintenance, and property division was not done by the court, in effect. The Cook case, which this court wrote, says it's not how well one of these factors is decided, but if they are together, complete, and complement one another, and are coupled so that the family, the future family, which is now termed fragmented, their support needs and their future financial security is ensured.
So you are or you are not asking for a rule of law that it's always an erroneous exercise of discretion to value the economic and non-economic contributions to the marriage differently? Do you want a bright-line rule that's always an erroneous exercise of discretion, where the economic contributions are valued differently from the non-economic contributions?
I think the rule of law is that the contributions of a homemaker are equal to the contributions of the moneymaker.
Always, in every case.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No matter what.
Even though the statute says that presumption can be overridden.
But the statute says that there's due consideration, the contributions of the marriage, which are numerous.
And one factor,
you're absolutely right. The presumption, the presumption or distribution can be overcome by a short marriage, can be overcome by the other statutory factors, property brought to the marriage, or can be overcome by factors such as other assets. Mrs. Rockefeller was married to someone, and they acquired certain assets, and she brought this property to the marriage. There are the statutory factors to divide the property unequally, but the court must follow those. The court did not follow those here. The court, in fact, relied only on this economic contribution, or on the contribution. The court calls it economic, but the statute says contribution of each party to the marriage. And the rule, I would think, Your Honor, would be that the court is not here to say that Mrs. Lemire's economic or is not as great than her husband's, because to do so is to treat them unequally and to value it, or value that economic contribution. And I don't believe the statute says they are to value it. In regard to the child support issue, the court simply did not follow the percentage standards. And the court, in fact, did create two new factors, one overindulgence and resentment, unexplained factors, when it made a determination not to follow the percentage standards as outlined in the statute. The court simply said to put a cap, a new factor into the law on child support, said, I feel that to give these children 25% of the income according to the standards, which are mandated to be filed by the legislature, is to spoil the children. That language is used in the court's decision. That is not a factor under 767.25. And, of course, the other factor, the court says, in the best interest, it would cause resentment. It never explains that resentment. Thank you, Your Honor.
No, you're not done yet.
Oh,
Justice Babbitt has a question.
I'm sorry.
I have a question. Let me change the facts just a little bit to test your proposal. Let's assume that in addition to the husband being as industrious as he was at the job, etc., he also then would come home at night and would cook the meals for the kids, put them to bed, clean up the house, because, in fact, the wife, for the most part, had sat around all day watching soaps. And that became a finding of fact. Would you be here today?
Yes, Your Honor.
You'd still argue that this should be a 50-50 split.
That's right. I don't think the court wants to go and this would open the floodgates of what did I do in this marriage, what did you do in this marriage, and then the trial courts would be evaluating each person's domestic gifts to this marriage, contributions.
Not gifts, but efforts.
Efforts.
Where obviously the wife, take a different wife, different situation, the efforts of the wife or of the spouse were very disparate.
Right.
The efforts of one at the job were very good and also at home, and the other one really contributed nothing except sitting around watching soaps.
And if each party felt that was unfair, or one party felt that was unfair, their option, of course, is to divorce, is to leave that shared relationship. People share not...
But leave it with 50% of the assets.
That's right. Because people share on their own terms. Everyone, as I heard on the radio, the Milwaukee attorney Leonard Loeb said, each party feels they do 90% in the marriage. And that's probably the case. I don't think it should be how we perceive our contribution, but that the contribution by us remaining together in a marital state as equals is 50-50.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Before you begin, Ms. Gameltoff, I did commit an unpardonable sin in not introducing the court. Now, I can do a lot of things that are bad. Not introducing the court is one of the worst things I could do. So I would like to make amends at the moment and introduce the court to all of you. And I'm going to start on my far right, and that's Justice David Prosser. Oh, we all have name tags, but you probably can't see them. And Justice Ann Walsh Bradley is seated next to him. To my immediate right is Justice William Babbage. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my left is Justice John Wilcox, and to his left, Justice Patrick Brooks. And on the far left of the bench is Justice Diane Sykes. I also did not introduce, should have, the clerk of court, Bernie Flatoff, who not only performs wonderful service here as the clerk, but is on a planning committee of the Supreme Court and a funding committee of the court, and does a wonderful job for the entire state. So thank you for being so loyal to the institutions that you serve and for attending today. So with Am I properly given? We'll reserve a little bit.
Pick it up in time.
It'll be a 4-3 vote. Ms. Gameltoff.
My name is Lisa Lotta Gameltoff, and I represent Michael Lemire. The decisions that were appealed in this case were all discretionary decisions, and it is our position that there was no erroneous exercise of discretion and that the court did apply the applicable statutes and case law. And as this court very well knows, an appellate court is to look for reasons to sustain a trial court's discretionary decisions and may independently search the record to determine whether additional reasons exist. All the decisions in this court are ones in which the court did apply the proper standard of law and reached a conclusion that a reasonable judge could reach. Now, this case, from reading the briefs and listening to the argument, it would appear that the trial court in this case gave no recognition to Marsha LeBeer's contributions as a homemaker and mother, and that she walked away with nothing. And I think it's clear from the court's questions that the court recognizes that is not the case, in the sense that certainly Ms. Lemire did receive substantial property. While the trial court did divide one asset unequally, the entire marital estate was divided on a 54-46 basis, and Ms. Lemire received approximately $1.5 million assets with a value of approximately $1.5 million.
Should he get?
About 1.7.
1.7. That's $1,750,000.
Right.
Okay.
Sorry. Yes.
Counsel?
Yes.
You started off by saying that these are discretionary decisions. I want to test that a little bit. In the absence of findings that one party's efforts greatly surpassed the other, do you believe the court still has discretion to depart from that 50-50 split?
Well, I think that, first of all, in reviewing, I believe it was Justice Bradley's question, the court, I think, did make a finding about Ms. Lemire's contributions in the sense it said, in making this finding about his contributions, I am not ignoring the contributions the respondent made. I do not find her testimony credible with respect to how much she was required to do. So
well,
I believe
in the petitioner's absence.
Pardon?
In the
petitioner's
absence.
Right. Right. I understand. But I think that was a finding, in a sense, of...
See, it seems to me that as a matter of law, we start off with the basic proposition that this is, presumptively, it's a 50-50 split. And, therefore, there is a question of law involved here.
Yes, Your Honor.
In addition to a discretionary. So I'm wondering where that discretion, where that question of law ends and discretion begins. And it seems to me that an obvious place where you could at least say the judge has discretion is when the judge finds that the contributions of one, the efforts, are greater than the others. But I don't see that here. I mean, maybe she'd only get $10 an hour if she had to hire somebody, but nevertheless, the parties made the decision that one was going to concentrate efforts on the home and the kids, the other one was going to concentrate efforts on the on making money for the family, and all of that together constituted the pot of the marriage. And why shouldn't it then be a matter of law that this presumption means that it's going to be 50-50 unless the efforts of one are far greater than the efforts of the other?
Well, I don't think what the statute indicates is that, I believe, is that the court can look at the contribution of each party. And I believe on the basis of the, huge amount of testimony and the judge's decision, that is what the judge is finding, that Mike Lemire's contributions were more than the contributions in this case and to the business. And I think this is not a case saying that the homemaker's contributions are not equal to the wage earners or the person who brings in the money, because there are so many permutations of in our society. I mean, there are many women, I think, who are working outside the home and are still the primary caretakers, certainly contributing. This statute indicates, sub D, that one can take into account the contributions of each party and look at those contributions. And with regard to this case, it was a business that was built from the little soap box to a multimillion business. It's not the case of the person who is working at Procter & Gamble and rises through the ranks. It's a different type of situation. I think that the judge was looking and saying this is very specific, and that's why he looked at the Parrott case, which obviously is also a very different situation.
Okay, in light of that, I'll go. It says, here's what bothers me. The judge is going to exercise discretion. Here's how the judge exercised it. He took the assets other than the business, and he divided them 50-50 on the theory that each one of them put in efforts and they were accumulated, right?
Right.
That's at the bottom of page 125. And he said, as to the business, that was predominantly the husband's contribution. That's how this business got organized. And that business, which is a major part of the family's assets, that business is going to be divided unequally. And why will it be divided unequally? Because it's based on the husband's industriousness and extensive efforts. Now, I don't see any difference between that and the guy going up through Procter & Gamble, who is industrious and makes extensive efforts at the job and makes more money because of that and finally becomes CEO. Now, if this division and this discretion stands, then any partner in the marriage, whether it be man or woman, who goes outside the home and is industrious and makes extensive efforts to make money gets more than 50% that is earned from that. And the wife's or husband's, whichever is the stay-at-home, or the person who doesn't stay at home but earns less money, does not share 50-50. I can see no other discretion exercised here other than to say industriousness and extensive efforts in the business world gets you more than 50-50. What else is there?
Well, I think, first of all, that sentence ends industriousness and creative, I mean, and extensive efforts in creating a business enterprise. And I think that is what the judge was distinguishing.
The CEO is a business enterprise, too. A good CEO can move from General Motors to Enron, and then that's when he fails. But until then, he can keep moving from one corporation. I read this every day in the newspaper, one corporation to another. And what he has is his own business enterprise of himself, going out and making a lot of money.
I think you're trying to distinguish, if I understand the Chief's question, you're trying to distinguish from a person who, quote, built the business from a shoebox to a multi-million dollar, then the example that the Chief is giving. In other words, is there a difference between those people? And, look, throw in a person that's in the agricultural business that went from, you know, a 20-acre farm to a 2,000-acre farm has happened right around Stephen's point. The point is, how can you equate that differently than the person who worked for Procter & Gamble or any other company and went up in rank? And should you be doing that?
Well, I think that the statute does allow the court to do that, and I certainly agree that this is not supposed to be a broad rule that the person's earning the money is, or you know, if have made a lot of money somehow, that's more worthwhile in every case than the homemakers. That's not what we're arguing, but I think it's a case by case analysis, and I think that's really important because we were there for 5 days. There was an incredible amount of testimony, exhibits. The judge made a decision based on the testimony presented over that time, the exhibits, the testimony with regard to contributions as a homemaker, the testimony with regard to the work, and on that basis, on the basis of the statute, which does give him the discretion to consider that, made that decision.
Well, the only thing in the opinion, now, if you've got other evidence, right, you should bring it up. But the only thing in the opinion is industriousness and extensive efforts in creating the business enterprise. Business enterprise could have been a lawyer here, could have been a doctor, could have been the CEO. What else is there upon which the judge could have exercised discretion not to give her 50% of this business?
Well, I think that there are cases cited in my brief. I think there are cases, and I realize you talked about the early 70s, and I think the Jasper case is a late 70s case, but then the Parrott case, and I believe in Sellers, where there are...
Parrott was 88.
Pardon?
Parrott was 88 and
right,
a 7-year marriage.
Well, But I think Parrott's decision was very different because they also divided the property division in a much more inequitable way. I mean, the marital assets, I mean, that certainly was something that was taken into account. And I think that, I've lost my train of thought here, sorry.
Well, Ms. Gamelkopf, what other factors are there, other than his industriousness and extensive efforts, that justify, what was it, a 60-40 or 65-40?
65-35%
to take that percentage. What other factors, other than industriousness and extensive efforts?
Those would be the key factors.
Yeah, and that leaves the problem for me that any time you have a wage earner, profit maker, who's industrious and has extensive efforts, in a business that was created and fostered during a marriage, I'm not talking about one before the marriage, that will always be viewed as justifying a deviation from 50-50, when the concept of 50-50 is that the homemaker, male or female, the homemaker's contribution at home, the family and children, enables the guy or gal outside the home to be industrious and make extensive efforts. Otherwise, somebody else would be doing his laundry. He'd have to do his own laundry. He couldn't be so industrious and extensive efforts.
Well, but I think that the court recognized those efforts, too. I mean, or the contribution.
35%.
For that particular asset.
Here the court seemed to go into the homemaking, but and did compare the that she was taking care of the home, and then on the same page 125 talked about in the middle paragraph that. Yet she conceded that the girls preferred to be by themselves and seems to make the inference, at least, that there was a normal relationship between the father and the children. But it seemed to me that the court was saying that the father did contribute, but yet the mother had the, as noted around the bench here, the mother had the primary duty of being the homemaker. And what does that show discretion there? She was the mother was the homemaker, but the father was primarily involved with the business. That's the inference that I get from reading this decision. They said they had a normal relationship with the father and not an estranged one as portrayed by the respondent. But the point is that the bulk of the homemaking was provided by the mother.
That's right.
Okay.
No. Counsel, if I may.
Justice Bradley, then Justice Brass.
Thank you, Chief. There have been a couple of articles in this case, about this case, in the Wisconsin Law Journal, January 22nd of this year, and also January 29th of this year. Did you have an opportunity? Law. The practice of family law in Wisconsin is bound to change substantially should the state Supreme Court affirm the lower court in Lemire. It says, most lawyers have given up trying to argue for an unequal division of the marital estate in cases where the husband worked long hours and the wife raised the children. The holding of Parrott has been rarely utilized. It continues, the impossibility of a valid comparison has led Wisconsin courts other than in Parrott to treat the contributions of wage earners and homemakers equally. Do you have any response, do you think, to that contention that affirming the Court of Appeals here would significantly change the practice of family law in this state?
I don't think that affirming the case here would necessarily. I think obviously it depends on how the decision is written, but I feel that this is a can be drawn very narrowly, and I think that in its own way the trial court tried to do that. And I don't, you know, the fact is that, the, you know, as Attorney Sickle indicated, the Parrott case is there and has been cited in a number of cases for various issues. And if the court is going to overrule the Parrott case and indicate that that in terms of valuing these things, that they have to be valued always equally, that's one thing. But I think the statute, I mean, I still believe that the statute, which gives the court the discretion to consider the contribution of each party to the marriage, means that the court can consider the contributions of each party to the marriage. And if the court does so in some way that is not applying, and the court recognized the contributions of each party here to the marriage, and what the court did was that it did, the trial court did find that the contributions did support an unequal property division with regard to the business. And I think that in terms of this decision, it was not an erroneous exercise of discretion. And
but,
I do,
but that, but subsection D, subsection D, to follow up with Justice Bradley, does not say financial contributions. It simply says contributions.
Right, but I think in terms of the case law, it has been alluded to and usually interpreted as meaning financial contribution. Well, it's financial, it's contributions, recognizing that the contributions of the homemaker often are equal to and in some case may exceed the contribution of the financial contribution. So it's talking about looking at the different contributions. And in this case, the court found that the contributions of Mike Lemire with regard to the business exceeded those contributions on that scale of Marshall Lemire.
Counsel, is the court entitled to take into account interests of the business itself as opposed to the interests of the parties? In other words, the stability of the business, the development of the business, the employees of the business.
Do you mean in terms of the final property division? Or
yeah.
I think that becomes a factor in the property division. I don't think that necessarily is a factor in whether it's a 50-50 division, or maybe I'm not following.
Well, if there's a 50-50 split, say, of stock, certainly one party could sell the stock, perhaps to a hostile interest.
Yeah, I don't think that in this case that was an issue, because I think that
I mean, we're talking about as a matter of law here.
Right.
The principle that I think some members of the court appear to be arguing, and that counsel Mr. Sickle argued, is that basically this should be a 50-50 split of the property when there is a business, unless there are sort of exceptional circumstances that don't come into play here. And I'm asking you whether the court can take a look at the business that is the asset here and its stability and its future, and take that into account in deciding whether there should be something other than a 50-50 split. In other words, in order to get a 50-50 split, can you disregard the interests of all the employees who might lose their jobs because of this?
Well, I think that, if I'm understanding it correctly, I think that goes more to how the property is divided and how the court is going to, as in this case, determine how the property division payment is going to be made and how the other assets are going to be divided, rather than saying that the business or some other asset should be divided unequally.
In other words, they didn't have to give her 50% of the stock.
Right.
They could have given him 100% of the business and then given her the rest of the assets,
right,
plus a debt,
right,
or an,
right,
encumbrance.
Which is
stock.
What happened in this case.
Yes. So that you, that you would do it that way. And if you couldn't, that might go into a factor of how you would evaluate this business. If it was totally involved with him, so there'd be a factor in there, should he die young or some other aspect, if I understood your answer.
Why should the spouse who, why should the spouse get less than 50% of the other property?
I can answer it. Let's see if Ms. Gamble's going to answer.
Why should the spouse get less than 50%? What, in other situations, you mean?
Yeah. Or in this one, why would you divide it 100%? He gets the stock and 100% she gets all the AT&T shares or whatever.
So that the bottom line is still 50-50?
50-50, yes. But Justice Prosser is saying to you, why shouldn't he get 50% of the AT&T stock or whatever the asset is, 50% of the house?
Well, I think that in this particular, I mean, I think still, I mean, the court can, this is, Wisconsin is, I believe it's called equitable distribution state, not an equal division state, and the court has those factors they can consider in terms of deviating from a 50-50 division. So that really goes through the whole pot, for the whole pot, as well as particular assets. And there are sometimes, you know, in cases where people have been married and had significant retirement assets, and a court will often have retirement assets when they got married, and they might divide that retirement asset unequally and everything else 50-50 because of the contributions that were made prior to the marriage. So, I mean, there are many factors that go into it.
Well, the situation is, if you have a business that relies on an individual to really make that business or break it, and there is this equal division, I'm just thinking, and all of a sudden the business takes off, and what was valued during the marriage by both sides as $1 million business becomes a $500 million business, and then all of a this is done. I don't think we would want to allow the husband or the wife to come back and say, look, he got all the stock, I had an equal division, and therefore it wasn't, you know, I got a bad deal and come back into court. So the point is that when you're taking a 50-50 division, you can do it in many different ways. And that was done here in the sense that there was a 65-35 split, but as you indicated in your brief, you came at least to a 56-54 split.
Right.
In that sense, that I think the question that Justice Prosser is asking is what effect does this have on the business, the employees? Can you take that into account? Because we're not just writing for this case. We're trying to think about what happens when you have this type of situation and what effect will it have.
I don't believe that that is a factor that you take into account in the property division. It's more a factor you take into account in evaluation of that business, and then, which was a large issue in this case.
Well, that was an issue in this case of his individual entrepreneurship and what it would be if he wasn't with the business or was with the business.
Right, but that really was an issue that went into the valuation. And then I think it was conceded and agreed that Mr. Lemire was going to be awarded the business, and then the other assets had to be divided in such a way that Ms. Lemire was compensated.
You make in your response the distinction between valuation and awarding, that the valuation, there's to be a presumption of 50-50 split in the total value of the net marital estate, but who gets awarded any individual property within that net marital estate can consider things like, well, it's a going business, and so let's say the husband was the one that started and continued it, and he's going to be awarded 100% of that, but the value of the business makes up part of the net marital estate, and there's a presumption of the 50-50. That seems to be what you're suggesting.
I believe.
I don't want to misstate what you're saying. I just want to make sure that I got it correctly.
I think so.
Counsel.
Yes.
I want to ask you the same question I asked Mr. Sickle early. And that is, Do you make any claim here that the efforts of Mrs. Lemire, of Mr. Lemire, your client, were much greater than the efforts that Mrs. Lemire put into her homemaking and child raising? I'm not talking about putting a dollar sign on either one.
I'm not putting a dollar sign. I mean, I think that is part of the claim, and that in this particular case, and it's impossible. I mean,
Do you find that in the judge's findings of fact that he extols the efforts of Mr. Lemire, but he doesn't say anything about the fact that these were far greater in relative terms than Mrs. Lemire's efforts in her role?
I realize that, I mean, there are no specific words to that effect, but I think in terms of his analysis of the trial court's analysis of the contributions of Mr. Lemire, and then the paragraph where he does talk about Ms. Lemire's contributions, that one can infer that that is what the judge was finding.
Let me take the hypothetical, draw it out a little bit. What if these findings of fact included findings that Mrs. Lemire put in 18 to 20 hour days, 7 days a week, was an incredibly industrious, hardworking homemaker, and relieved Mr. Lemire of any responsibilities in that area, and she did it all. And her efforts were as great at her homemaking role as his efforts were at this business role. Would you still claim that the judge can deviate from 50-50?
I think if the judge can deviate from 50-50, I think that's a much tougher case to defend if that were, in fact, the finding that, but that isn't what the court found.
Well, the court found on 125, go back to that, found that as to the non-fitness company's assets, okay, that should be divided 50-50. And the reason it should be divided 50-50 was because those assets were not accumulated, quote, as a result of the husband's ingenuity and hard work. So what you have on the 50-50 division is what you have on all other assets is you've got it like this, because it appears as if their contributions were the same. On the company, you put him up here because you're going to look at his ingenuity. But you never look at her ingenuity and industriousness as a whole in the marriage. He just divides that out. He just separates that out. So here's my question to you. Because that's what he does.
Right.
And I don't think you can disagree. And she's trying to find that she did a greater contribution because he wasn't home, and the judge doesn't buy that. And we won't debate whether or not that's accurate. You said, in response to Justice Bradley, that it depends on how we write this, because there's a question as to whether we should say anytime the out-of-the-home person is industrious and has extensive efforts, he or she should get a higher percent, right? So how would you write this so that's not the rule of this case?
Well, I think,
or maybe you think it should be the rule of the case.
That what?
Husband is industrious in extensive efforts in creating either a business or a profession or whatever. He gets more of that asset.
I don't think that is the rule.
Okay.
I think it's another case by case. And right. I think in this case, the court, and I think that's part of it, the court looked at, it did separate out the business from the other asset.
That's right. Now, how would you write the case so that isn't the result in every case?
I would...
It's not easy.
No, but I mean, I think that...
That's why we get the big bucks.
Exactly. And I believe that can be crafted in such a way that one would say that there are exceptional circumstances where facts can be taken into account that demonstrate unequal contributions, not necessarily financial, but contributions, and that in those particular circumstances, a court can consider some deviation. I'm not saying it very articulately, but I think I just the statutes there, the factors a court can take into account, this is one of the factors a court can take into account. The court took it into account, and I believe that this decision should not be overruled.
Thank you, Ms. Gameltoff. I'm sorry, are there any other questions? Okay.
And
thank
obviously,
you.
I also, my brief speaks for itself, I hope, with regard to child support maintenance.
Thank you. There are three issues here. Right. Mr. Sickel?
Thank you, Your Honor. In response to your last question, my view would be it can't be written, that you can't write a law that would reward someone for a industrious and efforts in creating a financial asset without being inequitable to the other party.
Should the Parrott case be overruled?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think in light of the Parrott, as Parrott saying, this genius factor exists and that the courts can consider this in their discretion. And the problem is what is the concept of genius? As I think Edison said, genius is 90% perspiration and 10% inspiration. And that's the problem. How do you quantify? How do you define genius? How do you sit there and take testimony and make subjective decisions of a judge that this gentleman or this woman created? In fact, I believe there's a Florida case where a woman sat home and worked on the internet and created a huge asset. She didn't buy Enron. Apparently, she bought something that went in a stock portfolio and created a multi-million-dollar stock portfolio. And she claimed her industry, her frugality, generated this as her husband won off and earned big bucks at some corporation. Therefore, she should get more than that, more than half of that.
Mr. Sickle, let me ask you if I might. Was the stock all in Mr. Lemire's name?
No, not in this case, Your Honor.
Was it joint?
Yes. It was a corporation.
So you didn't have capital gains implications?
No, Your Honor. This is an S corporation, and in fact, that's one of the factors where Mr. Lemire's income was nearly $400,000 a year. And, of course, that income is derived partly from a salary he received, but also from the S distributions. And that had been, bringing up that point, for some time, and that these parties were very frugal. And in fact, that's one of the contributions that Marcia made to this whole asset. The fact situation is when they ended this divorce, or when this divorce came up after 20 years of marriage, they had no debt. They had $3.5 million or $3.175 million worth of assets. They both contributed in her frugality, another thing, to this business, as it were. And then, of course, we're dividing. And what the court did is basically a reward. Why should Mr. Lemire be rewarded, or why shouldn't Mr. Lemire? And that's what happens when you start evaluating both of the contributions.
But, counsel, we could certainly write this case without overruling Parrott. What you're saying, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're saying that based on the facts in this case and the contributions that each party made and the presumption of 50-50, that you believe there was an erroneous exercise of discretion by the trial judge. However, the court, and I think opposing counsel and the law is saying, well, the court does look at the contributions of each party, and as Justice Babbage pointed out, I think to both, that if there is that situation, would you say that the court could take that into consideration and come to a different outcome, different than 50-50, if, obviously, if the presumption was overcome? So I think what you're saying, that wasn't overcome here. Here it didn't happen.
Right. If there were other factors, such as a short marriage or other factors, well, but on the contribution, Section D, if you will, of the statute, sub 3D, which talks about the contributions, to do that, Your Honor, would require that the courts do value, as Justice Bradley indicated in the law review, or not, the bar bulletin, the courts will start then and would have to value each person's contribution. And I don't believe that that's what the parties did when they entered into this relationship. They started a partnership, as we call it here, a marital partnership, and they said we're equal. They didn't say that we're equal and we're going to make this partnership work and have all these contributions and assets, and then if it goes above the norm, then on the exit of the partnership, the person who put in the more efforts, if you will, as I see them or as they can explain to the court, I should get more than half. But that is a concept of course, that I get what I earn, and is contrary to the sharing concept that what you earn during your marriage is part of your marital assets.
Thank you, Mr. Van Sickle. And thank you, Ms. Gameltoft, for your arguments today in a very interesting case. And we want to thank you for coming from Green Bay to Stevens Point instead of coming from Green Bay to Madison. So thank you. And the Portage County community welcomes you and hopes you stay for the day and add to their economy. Much. That ends our hearing in 01-2204.